Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo and happy to be here for our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology monthly office hours calls. These are the calls where you get to ask whatever questions are on your mind, to report in any successes or new protocols or new resources you've happened upon that you want to share with others, and to just connect and just grow and grow ourselves clinically, our skills in terms of our people connection, and also to increase the confidence, because confidence is a huge piece of creating a successful practice. And I find that it's one of the things I hear the most is that people don't feel like they know enough or have the confidence to really help people. So I'm here to remind you that you know a lot. You know a lot more than the average patient. Yeah, you might get some people coming into your office who are very well read and know a lot, but they're coming to you for additional advice, and you have what it takes to get the resources together to figure it out and to work with them. And you're never putting out there that you have all the answers. What you're putting out there is that you're a resource for people to coach them through the difficult changes sometimes that have to be made in order to achieve improved health, but also to help them in order to be able to dig. And most of their medical practitioners are not willing to do that. It's like, well, we don't know what's wrong with you. Come back in a year and we'll check to see if you're still feeling the same. Or try this medication or try this other. And I know all of you, I know from talking to you that you really care. And you really care that a lot of people have gotten the runaround and not gotten the right answers or any answers or even been able to work with somebody that can help. And I've had a couple of really challenging cases over the last few years where people were just basically given up for dead, so to speak. It's like, we don't know what's wrong with you. Don't come back. We can't figure it out. And this is with neurologists and specialists and kidney specialists, et cetera. So what she really appreciates is not that I have all the answers, because I don't, but that I'm willing to sit with her and work with her and experiment and be there and guide her and support her. So that's what you do really well, because you're coming from this place of caring and compassion. Not to say you don't need to set boundaries on that, and you're not going to allow people to just walk all over you, but when you get into a really good therapeutic relationship, they're just, they're very respectful of you and your time, and you're able to help them on a really deep level. So the way that these calls work is there's a couple of questions that were submitted in advance. I have tried to open it up, and it seems like I'm not able to get to this particular page. I'll try it again. But Lynn had told me that there were two questions typed in advance on the INE office hours. Yay, it just opened. Must have been a temporary glitch. One was from Allison, and she said one was from Alma, but I don't see it here. I'm not sure where Alma put hers in. So Allison says, I've added some results on IB, a patient with beta thalassemia, onto blood chem software, would be interested in your recommendations, and thought the low hemoglobin and MCV would be interesting talking points for office hours. And then the other question was from Alma. I wonder where she put it. She put it in some other place. Are you sure she meant it for this call, Lynn? Because if she's not going to be on this call, she may want to wait for the NEPT call next week. She said, could you review my Meridian Valley Comprehensive Ultimate Profile Test? I've uploaded it for the call. I would like some insight in the numbers that were out of range, especially the extremely high growth hormones. What do you think the cause would be, and what can I do about it? Could that be what's causing my frequent headaches? Okay, that's much more thorough than the little short one you gave me before. Now I have something to go on. Okay, so let's start with Allison's, because hers, they both sound complicated and they both sound like good learning experiences. But Allison sounds like it might be a little bit more straightforward, because the comprehensive test for Meridian Valley is a little bit complex, and those might be, you know, it might take a little bit longer. So before we actually jump into both of these, I want to see who's live on the call and who has a question or a comment or anything that you want to chat about or get coaching on a particular client. Raise your hand with a *2, and then we'll do that. So I'll handle the people who are on live right now, and then we'll go back and handle the two things that were typed in. And it looks like there's four people. We're going to keep these two. Yeah, and we're going to keep it to simple questions, hopefully, and so we have time to get through everybody. So I'm going to open up. Laura, hello.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hi.
Hi, I had a question for you. I was working on the liquid diet with just the Thorn MetaClear protein powder and water and the MCT oil.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to do that for 5 full days, and it just wasn't getting better as far as really bad headaches and fatigue and just kind of feeling like I had the flu.
Yeah.
So I decided to start adding in a little bit of food, and what I noticed was anything that I added in would immediately cause the bloat and the abdominal pain to come back. And it's almost like I can't really identify a specific food sensitivity. I'm almost feeling like anything at this point is causing inflammation.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure. I kind of feel like I'm in a catch-22 because I saw significant improvement in the abdominal bloating and distension and pain, like, you know, the pain after eating completely went away when I was on that liquid diet. I was just hungry all the time. But when I'm adding food back in, the brain fog clears up, the headaches and the migraines get significantly better, but that bloat and abdominal pain after I eat is back. And I kind of didn't know where to go from here. And one of the things that my physician had recommended was doing like a supplement just specifically for inflammation in the gut. And he had recommended, I'm not familiar with it, but it's like GI benefits from Emerson. Or he said it's one like Enteromend from Thorne.
Yeah, there's a number of them. Thorne has one. I know that Designs for Health has one. There's a bunch of them that have those. In our protocol, in our grant, then we give lists of some of those. So I don't know if you've looked there. But it sounds like, so the Thorne MediClear that you were taking during that 5 days actually has a lot of those nutrients in there because that's what it's intended for. You were doing the plus, right? The MediClear plus? Or just
yeah.
You were doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it has a whole lot of extra stuff. So your gut was naturally feeling better. So let me ask you a few questions. When you added the food back, what did you start with? What was the very first food you put in?
The first thing I started with was just a plain organic sweet potato.
Mm-hmm. And that caused you to immediately bloat up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then how long did you wait and how long did it take for that bloat to die down before you added another food in?
I started that in the evening, and I just kind of stopped food at that point and waited until lunchtime the following day.
Okay, good. Very good. So the reason I ask that is because a lot of times people are real anxious, right? They're too anxious to get on food. And instead of going, okay, I just got the symptom back, let me let it calm down before trying something else, they just try something else. And so the response and the experience is no matter what I put in, I get aggravated, but in reality, it could be that it's just you're still aggravated and anything you put in there when you're already aggravated is going to make it worse. So you did wait and you waited till the symptoms died down so there wasn't the bloat anymore before you added anything else?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good, good. And then what did you add?
And then for lunch the following day, I just tried like a very simple salad with some romaine lettuce and a little bit of olive oil, and I think it had like some carrots in there.
So let's stop here. Okay. Too complex, too raw, too aggravating.
Okay.
I would really recommend that you do at least, if you can't do a whole, 2 weeks straight of just the powder stuff, that once you transition off of that you stick to things that are simple, that are cooked. And the first thing you add back should not be something with that much starch because the starch can start to feed things and aggravate things, and it requires a lot of digestive aid to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I would start with something simple. I don't know how you do with avocado because I know it's on the FODMAP list, but if you handle avocado, that tends to be easy because it contains a lot of lipase to help it break down. It's primarily fat. It doesn't have a lot of fiber that can start to aggravate and irritate your already irritated gut. Okay. Mm-hmm. If not avocado, something like a vegetable like zucchini. And sometimes people do real well with zucchini mixed with, or yellow squash mixed with avocado to make a real, to make it creamier, you know, and more like, almost like it coats and slides versus has fibers that are going to aggravate. So I would just, don't even think about eating a salad for at least a couple of week period. I sometimes take people off all raw things unless they're, you know, not even blended sometimes, but unless they're juiced to avoid the fiber. Because if we're trying to heal and we don't get a complete healing there, you still have some irritation. The fiber, the romaine and all that other stuff, they're great foods, but they have a lot of cellulose. So it's like you want to avoid cellulose in that form, that broom-like form, because I don't think your gut can handle it.
Okay. And that's interesting because when I added back in green juice, I was okay. But you're right, like when I was eating it, like raw salads and things like that, it was not. So mm-hmm. with the zucchini or the yellow squash, would that be cooked then?
Oh, like absolutely. Okay, I'm going to give you, No, you're not allowed to eat any raw vegetables for at least, I would say, a month, given how long this thing's been going on. Unless you juice them, and that's good. You want to juice them because the juice provides all the extra chlorophyll and healing. But I wouldn't do any raw vegetables.
Oh, this makes me sad.
Oh, I know. It's just a short time, honey. It's really going to be short.
Okay.
You can test it, but I want you to get a feeling. I want to – there's the – how do I say this? There's a physiologic reaction, and then there's the psychological reaction and the fear that comes up around eating. And I want to get you to get a positive experience with putting food into your body. So your body can just say, okay, food, nourishment, this is good, instead of, food, irritation, inflammation, ouch, right? Mm. Not even on a conscious level, but on a cellular level. So I'd like you to stay away from the raw stuff. We can talk about it again. We can see how you're doing. But I really think you jumped the gun there by putting, first of all, starches do tend, it takes a lot of amylase, it just takes a lot of digestive power, and it's cooked. So don't know whether, did you take enzymes with it? Did you just take it by itself, the sweet potato?
I just took a small amount, like, I don't know, I cut it in half and I ate maybe a fourth.
Yeah.
And no digestive, I didn't have any enzymes or anything. I just wanted to try it and see.
Yeah, and it bloated you a little bit. I think it's a mistake to put a cooked starch in after a cleanse, after a thing like that, because it does take a lot of digestive power, and a lot of folks are carbohydrate intolerant, right? And I can't remember where that falls in the FODMAP, if it's medium, high, low, or whatever, but probably wasn't the best source. I wouldn't be putting in carbohydrate like that. I would put in something like that's a low carbohydrate food, but mix it with some avocado to give you some if avocado works for you. Does avocado work for you in general? Do you know?
I haven't tested plain avocado. I mean, I've made like my own dip, like with garlic and some onion and some avocado and some lime juice, and that will tend to do it. Well, that will bloat too, but I haven't done just plain avocado yet, so I should try that.
Yeah. So once you've gotten settled down, so you slept and you're feeling better again, the juice would be good, but then juice blended with avocado tends to be good. So rather than the avocado itself, because then you have the juice, which is loaded with nutrition, and then you have the staying power of the extra nutrition, the fat, the calories in the avocado. Now, if that doesn't work for you, that's fine. We'll look at something else. But I just think it's unfortunately going a lot slower. And if you had a bad reaction to a single food, going and doing a salad which had three or four foods is probably not going to be a good next step. And it's not a real good step anyway in terms of reintroducing for the first few days, because you want to keep you want to make your digestive tract have to work as little as possible to pull this nutrition in, but you're needing to get some food to your brain to avoid mm-hmm. the headaches and the brain fog and all. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it might even be that a nut milk or seed milk, like, you know, blending up some hemp seeds with some water, straining it to make sure you don't get the fiber. That will give you some omega-3s. It'll give you some good protein. It'll give you a little bit of carbohydrate. It'll give you the fats, and then put a digestive enzyme in there. So as you add the foods in, make sure you take some digestive enzymes in there. Make it as easy as possible for your body to be extracting the food, the fuel from the food that you're eating.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So would I need to go back on the liquid diet for a few days or just?
I don't want to get you back into that headachey situation, but if you found that you were okay after you woke up in the morning and it was all back down again, then mm-hmm. that's fine. And go back and just go gentle. Do some vegetable juices because you want to get a lot of the nutrition that you're not going to be able to get from, you know, cooking everything and not eating salads. So get it from the mm-hmm. raw vegetables. But keep the juices simple. That's the mistake so many people make. And you know, food elimination diets are challenging. They're challenging for the client to do. They're challenging for us as practitioners to guide people through because, you know, after the elimination, you're like, I want to get some food in me. And it's really hard to go slow. And I made those same mistakes. I did a 5-day water fast once and I felt phenomenal. I was all excited. This was like 30 years ago. And the first thing I did was, okay, I'm going to test rice. And I made a big pot full of brown rice, intending that I'd have some left over, and I ate the whole thing. And I felt like crap again, you know? But it wasn't that there was even a problem with rice. It was the quantity and the difficulty that my body had with absorbing it. Didn't think about putting enzymes in. So you're going through this process, and this process is going to help you dramatically with coaching people through it, because you're going to know emotionally how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't good, is
it?
Yeah.
No, and it was just interesting because my Tai Chi instructor this week, she had said, Laura, are you still doing that liquid fast? Because she knew I was on it last week. And I said, no, I've added food back in. And she said, good, because you were really pale and you didn't look well last week.
No.
So I was like, oh, you know, I didn't notice it as much on myself, but when other people were commenting, mm-hmm. I thought, okay.
Yeah, and some people tolerate fasting beautifully. Like, I tolerate fasting well. I feel terrible the first day or two or three. Not terrible, but just not really good. And then I was like, wow, I feel great. I can conquer the world. Not everybody is like that. And that's the whole thing about biochemical individuality and personalizing. Okay?
So just keep, like, add in one food at a time and just do cooked, avoid the raw veggies for a month.
And do as much juice as you can. As much juice as you can, veggie juice as you can to get the nutrients. And yes, and do digestive enzymes with it. Okay?
Okay. And do you think it's like what I've been doing is just doing the protein powder and water in the morning for breakfast to try to kind of keep that fasting going from my dinner to lunch, kind of?
I think it would be great. Yes, the less food, the less solid food you put in, the more you let it heal. So if you can find that sweet spot where you can keep your brain fog down, you can keep your headaches down, and even including some of that protein powder again as a supplement to the foods you're eating as well. You know, maybe you wait, but it could be very helpful because you're not going to be getting enough full, you know, scope of calories and nutrients, and that powder is just loaded with, you know, the vitamins, minerals, the proteins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Keep it up. You'll get there. Yep. Absolutely.
Okay.
Don't give up. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. And just to get back to what you said about the gut healing nutrients. Yes. Cause that's what I was going to ask you. Did you do any slippery elm? Did you do any marshmallow? Did you do any, you know, DGL? Did you do any, soothing kind of things? I'd be careful with glutamine at this point.
Well, on the liquid fast, I did do elixirs. I did slippery elm or the marshmallow root in hot water, and I did that before the protein powder and water drink.
Right, right.
And I do think that helped some, and I would do like water with like a drop of peppermint or a drop of digestion or some kind of gut soothing essential oil,
right.
And drinking
right.
that.
Well, do that before your food. So about a half an hour, 15
okay.
minutes before the food, prepare it, you know, let it get coated, let it get soothed. And that might help too. Cause really it takes a while to soothe and heal a leaky gut. And there, it's obviously inflamed and irritated. So the more you can do to calm it down while still getting enough calories in you and food in you to prevent the head stuff would be very advisable. Okay?
Do you like those single elixirs better than like the, I don't know, the supplements, like things where there's multiple things in there? Like the...
In your case, yeah. I mean, a lot of times okay. I just do it from convenience. I'll just put coconut and cordyceps, and that'll be my elixir, you know. And I think the more simple you keep it right now, the better your gut's going to be able to handle it.
Okay.
Okay?
That sounds awesome. Good.
All right. Keep us posted. You can always post on the Facebook group, you know.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Sure. Bye. Okay, so we have Modesto. I think that's Jane. We have Valerie. So I think we have Jane, Valerie, Simone, and Oakland, California. Not sure who that is at this point. So those are the ones we have. And then I'm going to try to get through these quickly, and then we'll go to Allison and Alma's questions. Okay, so is it Jane?
It's Jane.
Ah.
Hi. I just have a question because about that case study that got postponed. When would be the next time to go over it, on which call, or do I have to wait till the next month?
No, you don't have to wait till, because we've already got a lot of that established. I'm looking at the calendar right now to see when our next NEPT thing would be. I mean, we can certainly talk about some of it today, but it was pretty complicated and it may,
yeah.
You know, wow, it looks like we're not having another one until April. April 18th, which would be a week and a half from now.
April 18th. Okay.
Yeah, we can do it then.
Okay, I'll put it on okay. for April 18th. One thing, this, and I don't know if you had read my email. I think what happened, and this is for everybody if they're doing a case upload, is wait till the last minute to upload your files, because I was uploading my files as I was drafting it and saving it, and the only file that I uploaded was that health tracker that was the only one that you saw.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can upload early is what I guess what I'm saying. It saves the data within the fields, but it didn't save the files.
So you're saying type all the stuff into the fields and then upload the files at the end?
Yeah, when you're ready to actually upload and finish it, then upload the files.
Okay.
I'm thinking that's what happened.
Okay. So did you re-upload those so we can have a look at them? Because I'd like to take a look at them beforehand.
I sent it to your you told me to send it to your coaching.
Send it to coaching.
I can't get back to that file now that I've uploaded it. I went and tried the link.
No. It doesn't let you go back to it. But the,
yeah.
Let's see. I'm just making sure because I don't – INE case study. No, that's Alma.
I sent
that was
it
on,
to coaching. Let me see. Which one did I send it to?
Because I don't see it at in coaching. So try resending it and copy Lynn on it.
So it's coaching. Is it the one coaching at Dr. Rita Marie?
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't see it there.
Yeah, that's where I send it. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll try
yeah,
again.
Yeah, send it again and send copy Lynn on it. Okay?
Okay, we'll do.
That
thanks.
We'll make sure. Yeah. Okay, thanks. All right. So, Jane, and we have Valerie. Hello, Valerie. So, we have Valerie, Simone, Oakland, California, and then Jamie. Okay, so Valerie.
Okay, I am ready to do some testing. I've been through a leaky gut program and your metabolic reset. I've cut my thyroid meds to one-third of the dose it was as of October. I've gradually stepped it down. Found out I'm compound heterozygous for MTHFR and other SNPs as well. I am planning to do the Dutch. I don't know how to order it, and I'm wondering about the timing of it. I'm down to taking one dose of bioidentical estrogen a day. So I was just wondering, how does that impact the Dutch test?
It's going to impact it. Anything you're taking is going to show what your body's doing with what you're taking. And sometimes that's what we want. So there's two ways, and this is good for everybody who's going to do tests with patients. The first time you do a test, if they've been on medication for a long time, they've been on bioidenticals and all, you don't want them to get off of it. You want to see how that medication is working for them. So you do it with them on the supplements. You change their protocol if need be, add herbs, whatever. Then you do this second follow-up with them on the on the supplements if you want to see how they're doing on it. I find that some people say just take them off everything before doing the test. And what that does is gets them back and backtracks them. So that shows what they're like without, but not really, because it's kind of like it gives you a limbo land kind of approach. Because if they've been on something for months, you want to test them on what they've been on for months. So if you've been on this for months, you want to test what you're doing on it. Or you want to get off of it completely if that's what your plan is. Be off of it for a good month and then retest to allow things to return to baseline and see how well your body's making it. Does that make sense?
Yes. The biost I've been cutting basically in half every year for the past several years. And I'm down to one dose of the lowest dose daily now.
Okay. So what you can do is do the test with that dose. If you see things that are too high, then you're going to say, well, I probably don't need this anymore. But if things are still too low, then you'll say, yeah, I do need it, and I probably need a little bit more, or maybe I need progesterone, or maybe I need something else. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was just wondering if the timing of when should I take that one pill that I take during the day.
Oh, you take a biased pill?
It's a capsule.
Ouch. Okay. Yeah. So, and this is my opinion, and this is the opinion of quite a number of practitioners. Obviously, there are practitioners who don't agree, but I'm not a big fan of taking estrogen orally. There's been, and Allison, we can ask Allison to weigh in on this too, because that's her expertise, but I'm not a big fan of oral estrogen, just because any of the studies that did show problems showed it with oral estrogen. And it depends, if it's a biased, it's probably okay, it's probably estriol and estradiol, but do you know what the percentage is? Is it 25-75, 80-20? Do you have any idea?
Or I don't. What that it means? It is biased, but I don't know the percentages.
The percentages, yeah. So oral's not great. And I'm going to pull Allison, I'm going to open her line in a second and ask her opinion.
Well, that's why I've been trying to get off of it.
Okay.
So I've wanted to do it slowly, so I didn't.
So, yeah, you didn't create a problem. So I think you could. I would probably get it to do it now and just see what that's doing with you, and then have the discussion with your doctor about whether you can switch to cream, or I like to do mucous membrane, like put it on the labia or vaginally, which is the best way to do it, because you don't get the problem with creams is that the skin can become resistant over time, right? It gets used to it. But doing it on mucous membranes like anal mucosa, but better for estrogens in the vagina or labially, works a lot better. And then you don't run the risks associated with oral supplementation. But I'm going to open up Allison's line real quick and just see if she has anything to add to that, because she's an MD and that's her area of expertise. Allison, hey. Oops, are you there? We're hearing you.
Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound.
Whoops. You there, Allison? I don't know that she hears me, or she doesn't know that I hear her. Okay. I'm going to have you raise your hand, Allison, and we'll open up your line and add to that conversation. But the point is, I would probably just do it. I would probably just do it now just to see where you're at. As far as timing during the day, the Dutch is a urine test, so it doesn't really matter at the timing during the day. When you're doing a saliva test and you're taking something orally, we oftentimes try to make sure it's away from the testing time. But with the urine, I don't think that matters.
Good.
With the Dutch test, you can go to their site and order it. Or I've got this account, and I just got the notice back the end of last week as to what we have to do. We have to just, I still have to figure it out. I'm just going to give it to one of my team people to figure out how we actually order it, because we can get you a better price, like by $100 off to do it through our link. But we haven't gotten it set up yet. So I'm hoping that maybe, Lynn, if you can remind me tomorrow even or over the weekend to make sure that we look into that and get that test put on our lab testing page. So the way it'll work is we'll have it on our lab testing page just like all the rest. You'll go in, you order it, you pay for it. We get the order, then we have to submit the order to the lab and order that to them, and then they'll send you the kit directly. So that's okay. The stuff we were trying to work out. So I would say within a week we should have that set up.
Okay.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. In addition to that, I've already got lab orders for the blood work that I'm going to do.
And you're going to do a complete thyroid panel?
I don't really need to. I am not having the antigens. So I've already had those tested.
Okay.
Months ago, but I am going to do. I'm going to do the TSH, the free T3, free T4, and reverse T3.
Perfect. Yeah.
But
yeah,
since I've cut back on my meds so much, I'm not expecting to see a lot of reverse T3, but I want to know.
Right. Exactly. That's good. Yeah.
So
and then just make sure you do things like CRPs and homocysteine with the MTHFRs. You want to make sure you test homocysteine.
Right. That's definitely on my list. And I'm going to retest the magnesium RBC that was high last time.
Okay.
And my vitamin D is creeping up, too, because of healing the leaky gut. I'm actually absorbing more. I do have the SNP for the vitamin D issue.
Okay.
But my vitamin D is in the 90s now.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, so you're going to have to probably maintain higher doses. And that's true, you know, when you're working with people and they're going, but I'm taking so much vitamin D. If they have some of the SNPs, they're going to have to keep the levels higher.
I've been taking 10,000 units a day for years, and I was able to get it to the 60s. And once I healed my leaky gut, it went from the 60s to the 90s.
Perfect. Awesome.
So I want to keep track of that. Also doing total iron, and I'm going to redo a lipid panel.
Great.
And a few others. But the other thing is I think I'm going to go ahead and run that BioHealth 205 that we've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, the last question is, should I plan to run either a BioHealth 401H or a Doctor's Data Comprehensive with parasitology?
I don't know enough about your history to know that, whether you're having gut stuff or whether it's certainly good to have. Sometimes there's too much data, like we get too much stuff, but if you've worked on the leaky gut and you want to see what's left and if there's still some gut stuff in there, I like the doctor's data better, unless you're suspicious of H. pylori, unless you really have this, like, you're showing signs that you think it's H. pylori, then I would run, or you can run the doctor's data with just the H. pylori part on the BioHealth side.
Ah, okay. Great.
Yeah. Yeah, and that gives you the most comprehensive look.
Okay. Do you think it makes sense to try that one now? Because I've been through the program. I was, through a questionnaire, I was lumped into the SIBO category.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt to do it now. If you've already done a lot of the gut healing stuff and now you're like, what do I do next? Is there anything I need to do next? Then it's a good time to do it.
Okay. That's kind of where I am. I've done what I know to do, and I think I need to know where I am so I can plan the next phase.
Yep, absolutely. Because sometimes there's some weird obscured bacteria or yeast that's growing, and you wouldn't know it, and you wouldn't know the specifics. Like, it's resistant to these five things, and it's only going to be sensitive to this one. And had somebody yesterday whose test came back, and was suspicious of these bugs, and she had been in the hospital, and she got some, you know, got skin kind of things, and we're like, oh, and they're not responding. So we did the gut test, and she was resistant. She had two bacteria that were resistant to everything that she'd been on, and there were two things that she hadn't been on in a long time that they were sensitive to. Now, we wouldn't have known that. Because you go, well, berberine, it should work. Oregano should work. No, she was resistant to that. And the only ones that she was sensitive to were silver and grapefruit seed extract, which we didn't have her on either of those. So it's a really good thing to be able to get specific and then see changes.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Great. That was a lot of help.
You're welcome, Valerie. Bye.
Bye.
I'm going to see if Allison's line opens. Oh, she disappeared. Now she's gone altogether. She just Skyped me and said she was still hearing. No, I don't see you at all. Raise your hand. Star 2. And then I can open her if she's there still. Okay, so let me put, okay, so we have Simone, Cell Phone Oakland, and then Jamie. And let me just check to see, hang on, before I hit you, Simone, I'm going to see if this is Allison. Allison, did you just raise your hand? Is that you?
I did. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, yeah. So thank you. Yeah, I would love for you to weigh in on that oral estrogen and what your opinions are on that.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. The problem with oral estrogen, which is what we do nearly all the time in sort of mainstream medicine, it is that it's you have to give it in much higher doses because of the fact that it's denatured by the liver. So it has to pass through the first pass metabolism before it can reach the bloodstream properly. So using topical estrogen is ideal. I usually recommend creams on the skin with bioidenticals, but if I'm using testosterone, we'll often use it vulvally, as you suggested, as well. But yeah, biased would be better because you're exposing the body to a lower, more physiologic dose if it was given topically.
Great. Thank you. I just wanted to hear your opinion to just make sure that you didn't have any other experience with it that I wasn't aware of. So thank you.
I agree totally.
Good. There we go. And I'm going to keep your hand up there, Allison, because after I finish these three people, I'm going to do your case. And then Alma, if you're on the line, raise your hand. Maybe you already have. Maybe you're the Oakland one. But Simone, if you've got a phone going on in the background, make sure you turn it off. It sounds like you're there, but you're not speaking.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hello? Okay.
Yes.
Great. Happy belated birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It was lovely to share that Google Hangout with you that morning. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're on it.
Yeah, I haven't managed to link up with the other calls, but I'll listen to or watch the replays when I get a chance. But anyway, two things. I've been listening to the Lyme Summit because I have contracted Lyme at least once that I know of, maybe more times. I think I need to investigate further is different kind of testing that's now available that wasn't when I had it that time in 2010. But what I've discovered from listening to this is that this sort of little constellation of symptoms that I have really could all be chronic Lyme.
Yeah.
And, so I didn't have a chance to look on your website to see if you have this test called iSpot test.
No. Those are specific tests we don't do. Yeah.
Okay. I will keep investigating that, but I just was pretty actually surprised, encouraged that maybe there is really an answer for why I've got all this stuff going on when I'm like doing everything else.
Right. And that's what we start to look at when you're doing so much of the right stuff. What is the zebra? Because we don't look for zebras until you've explored the horses and they're not panning out. And it's very common. The unfortunate thing is with Lyme, it's not like, oh, I just figured it out and now I get to heal it. It takes a lot of effort, energy, and work. And I would find somebody who specializes in that, you know, who from an alternative perspective and can help you with it.
Yeah. Well, this has been very enlightening listening to this conference, because the degree of knowledge and information is like exponentially more than back in 2010 when I got it. And it's very detailed, and I'm just like totally I'm in awe of this Borrelia organism, of which there are many different ones, but it is incredibly adaptive and able to hide out like nobody's business and just really take over. So that's something I'm going to be looking into. But
there's good resources on that summit, so you might, I'm sure you'll be able to find where to get these tests done. The folks on there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know what lab does it, but I just didn't know if you had a set up for it already. Yeah. So then I sent my 23andMe and I should be getting those results back. And I know you've talked about some programs for kind of deciphering it and making sense of it. And I think you mentioned Prometheus, and you might have mentioned another one, but I wondered if you could just speak.
There's a genetic genie.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's MTHFR support. There's a new one that I keep forgetting the name of, but Jamie knows when I open his line right after you. I'll have him repeat it, has a nice report. And you really just want to get some interface that's going to give you a report, because going through the SNP data on 23andMe is not something you want to do. So any of those. MTHFR support gives you like a 40-page report. It categorizes them by the different parts of the body. It doesn't have deep explanations, but it'll say, here's some related to the eyes. These are related to thyroid. These are related to gluten. You know, this group is related to cardiac and et cetera, methylation. So it's a really well worthwhile. I would definitely get that kind of a report. Prometheus, I thought, had some good information regarding the ApoE. So it's only $5 to get it, and they categorized out. You didn't have to go digging for what kind of ApoE you had. But other than that, it was a little confusing. So none of them are perfect. None of them are perfect, they all kind of give you a bunch of information.
So you'd recommend more than one then, I guess.
I usually start with the genetic genie, methylation, and detox, because it gives a very simple one-page report. And then in my ERC program, I have, and in the NEPT program, we have a chart that just explains each of those, like what each of the CYPs and everything mean and how to interpret it. Otherwise, you just have to look each one of them up. And then, so those two, I start with, those are free. They ask for a donation if you want to give a donation. And then the MTHFR support is very comprehensive, lots of information, but not a lot of explanations. The one that Jamie recommended doesn't have as many SNPs as that one has, but it has a lot of the major ones and gives some good explanation. So when I open his line, I'll have him repeat the name of that one. Okay?
Okay, so MTHFR support, that's the 40-page report, and that costs about, do we know?
Oh, what did I just say? I just said $30.
Oh, $30. Okay. And Genetic Genie is a donation one?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's just one page. That's methylation and detox. And then Prometheus is APOE. That's $5. It sounds like all three of those would be helpful.
Yep. They all give you just a little bit. It's like every piece gives you a little bit of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Jamie.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you just perfectly.
Very good, very good. I've just got a couple of quick questions for you this evening. One of them is concerning my mum, and I want to help her out, but it's an area that I don't have a lot of expertise in. So I wanted to ask your opinion about something. She had breast cancer about 11 years ago. She went through chemotherapy, radiation, the full works, and she's now just on one medication, which is called anastrozole. It's a non-steroidal aromatase inhibiting drug that's used after breast cancer treatment. But obviously one of the side effects of this is it affects bone density and bone health. And her last bone density test that she went for, doctor was very concerned about her bone health deterioration. So I wanted, and she was recommended to take calcium and vitamin D. I obviously cautioned against that, just taking those two minerals. And I did, I've done a hair analysis for her, and I'm also going to do some blood testing. But I just wanted to, she's very concerned, obviously, about me doing anything that's going to upset her hormones because of what she's been recommended by the specialist she's seeing. So I just wanted to ask where you would go in this situation. You know, would you look at her hormones? Would you run a Dutch test? What would you recommend in this
situation? Yeah. I mean, that's what I would want to do. But the thing is, if you find things there, right, what you're going to hit up against is her resistance to and fear, basically. Oh, but you can't mess up with the hormones, and I can't do this, and I can't do that. So it's a challenging situation, especially with your mom, right, who doesn't come and pay you money and respect your opinion. she feels like you're interfering.
But both my parents are retired GPs as well, just to give you a bit of background. So they've 60 years in the... field. But, you know, they have come around to my sort of way of thinking. It's taken me a few years, but my dad is much more open to it than my mum. My mum will obviously look straight at the medical databases and look for research there. But I just wanted to sort of get your opinion on it, really.
I would do a Dutch. You know why? I would do a Dutch because of wanting to look at the metabolites. And there's enough evidence that she can read about the dangers of the 4-hydroxy and the ratios and the 2:16 ratios with regard to bone health. And there's enough evidence there that you can point her to research and have her look. And you don't have to give her hormones, which is what most people are scared about in those situations. You're going to do things like, you know, cruciferous and DIM and I3C and all these other things to flow things around. You can tell if she's low in iodine pretty much by her estrogen quotient. So that would be where I would go.
Yeah.
And there's enough evidence, I think, especially even on the Dutch site, where there's a lot of research where you might be able to sway her to take a look at it more closely.
Yeah. I mean, I was just keen to get her, you know, just to check her nutrient levels as well, because she hasn't had any blood testing done at all, you know, to check. With the iodine testing, is it a 24-hour urine iodine test that you recommend?
It's usually 24-hour. The iodine load test is usually 24-hour.
And you recommend doing a loaded test to you rather than just a straight 24-hour sample?
Yeah, I think I do. I like to do the creep of somebody. Let me see. I must have somebody else. No, I'm echoing. All of a sudden, I'm echoing on your side. What I like to do is I like to have them do the spot test before the 24-hour. So they do the spot test first thing in the morning. Then they take their loading dose, and then they collect for 24 hours. I also like to do the bromine and the fluoride because that gives me an idea of what their toxicity levels are. And sometimes what I see is somebody might have, like, a very low level of bromine on the spot test. But then on the 24, they have a much higher dose. Even if it's not outside of the safe range, the average, it's usually above what's considered the national average. And that says to me, well, there's a bunch of bromine clogging up your iodine receptors. And so whenever you give that high dose, you're going to replace it, and then I'll put them on a protocol. Even if your iodine seems okay, then I would do it to get rid of the bromine.
Because there's a lab, the local lab that I work with over here in Portugal, they'll do a 24-hour iodine test, but it's not a loading test. So what is it that you need? Iodorol that you take?
Go to Hakala. Hakala will ship the test to you. I've had it shipped to Germany. I've had it shipped to Australia. They ship it. And they're very reasonable, and they actually send you, it's Iodorol, but it's really hard when you do it, like with Doctor's Data does the test, but I don't use them anymore because they don't give the person the dose of the Iodorol. So they have to go buy a whole bottle of Iodorol. Then they're saying, well, what if I don't need it? I've spent $30 on this if I didn't need it. So Hakala just sends them the, you know, 50 milligrams of Iodorol,
okay,
and they take it. So that's what I like to do. It's H-A-K-A-L-A, H-A-K-A-L-A, and they'll ship anywhere in the world.
H-A-K-A-L-A, okay.
Yep.
Very good. Okay. Brilliant. I will check that out. And the other question I had for you as well was actually concerning another family member, is my partner, Annabella. She's been having some pain underneath her left rib cage and also in her shoulder. And again, this is something that I don't know a huge amount about. I've been sort of delving and looking to find out what it could be. And one of the things that I came across was potentially a spleen, not a spleen rupture, but an enlargement of her spleen. But again, this is something that I'm not really sure about. And I wanted to know what you would recommend in this situation. I don't have a lot of experience with doing, you know, obviously physical exams or anything. So,
yeah. So, it could be spleen, it could be pancreas, it could be stomach, you know, anything over on that left side, right below the rib cage. And then there's always the referral into the shoulder, right? It's easy on the right because we know it's probably liver, gallbladder, especially if it's referring into the shoulder. So with spleen, you know, you can, without a lot of experience with poking around there, the risk you run, because if it is an enlarged spleen, you don't want to rupture it. And if you don't know what you're doing in terms of a physical exam, you can get in there too rough. You know, you could try some gentle poking just to see if you feel anything that feels enlarged. But what about an abdominal ultrasound? Just get her in an ultrasound to see if there's any swelling or enlargement there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. That's what I would do. I mean, is it severe pain or is it mild? I mean, it could be an indigestion too.
It's not really severe pain. It gets worse when she takes supplements. So if she takes HCL or she takes some of the digestive support, sometimes it gets worse. So one of the other things I was thinking about, her dad had stomach ulcers and had stomach cancer. So again, that was one thing that I was potentially thinking, it could be something going on with her stomach, H. pylori, something like that. So,
well, that's what I would think first. When you say that it gets worse when she takes supplements, then I'm thinking stomach rather than spleen. Spleen, it's really rare. I mean, if they have some kind of weird disease, they've had an accident, a trauma, you know, some kind of like leukemia, then you might see something in the spleen. But I think I had a brother who used to always look things up when he was a kid, and he'd come in, "Mommy, my spleen hurts." You know, I remember just thinking, he's like this 8-year-old kid, "Mommy, my spleen hurts," and he'd hold right over his spleen. It's really rare. I mean, you don't see that very often unless.
The other thing she said is when she lies on her side, also she feels sometimes feels pain in the evening. You know, when she goes.
What's the quality of the pain? So always when we're asking about pain, we want to know the quality of the pain. Is it burning? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it spasmodic?
It's not a sharp pain, particularly. It's but it comes and goes. It's not a constant pain. But like I said, it gets worse. She sometimes gets pain when she hasn't eaten for a long time, and she sometimes gets pain when she takes supplements. So, again,
so
this
test
is why
out something like slippery elm or marshmallow to see if that soothes it. Could be gastritis. I mean, it's unlikely to be a stomach ulcer presenting mildly like that. It could be, but it could be a gastritis. It could be hiatal hernia. I mean, usually you associate that with reflux, but it could be a hiatal hernia.
Okay. She does get some reflux, but only generally when she takes HCL.
Well, she should not take HCL at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would take her off the HCL. And I would do some soothing things just to see if that helps. You know, DGL, just go into the digestive module and look at the protocols and the different things that we use for reflux. and just try some of those soothers, you know, anti-inflammatories and soothers, and see if that helps.
Okay.
And that's just that's
brilliant.
Sort
They're
of diagnostic.
The most complicated family cases.
Oh, I know. They're hardest to work with too.
Clients are always the easiest, but family members are always the most tricky.
Oh, I totally get you. My son's been texting me. He went to Nicaragua last week on a school trip, and now he's got some stomach cramps and diarrhea and nausea, loss of appetite. And oh, by the way, so does everybody else who went on the trip. And I'm trying to get him. I said, I had found an acupuncturist there that he went to once before. I'm never getting acupuncture again. I'm like, what could they do if it's a parasite? I'm like, well, they could do a lot. There's herbs. I sent him herbs. I don't know if he's going to take the herbs I sent him. You know, you try with family members, but it's a crapshoot, you know?
Yeah. It is. It's never the same, is it? You don't treat them the same as clients. You know, when I send my parents questionnaires, I have about a 25-page questionnaire that I normally get clients to fill in. They look at me like, why are you taking all this?
Why do you want to know this? Why are you asking me about my bowel movements? And,
exactly.
Yeah, but if your mom will do the Dutch test, the other thing you might consider is an organic acid test, because that would give you a real good picture of the functional state of the nutrients as well, plus neurotransmitters and
they're sort of my go-to tests, the Dutch, the organic acids in the blood. So they're the sort of, and the hair. They're the three or four that I generally run on most clients.
It's a good starting point. And I don't usually jump to, I know we've talked a lot about on these calls, we've talked a lot about stool testing, but that's not where I jump to. I don't jump to stool testing. Right, because you can find out so much more functionally. And then if it's still going on, then you make them poop, because nobody wants to poop in a cup and catch it and play with it, stir it, and all that stuff.
Doing a couple of urine samples, isn't it?
Exactly. All right.
Very good. Thank you very much, as always. Much appreciated.
You're welcome. Bye, Jamie.
Thanks.
All right, so our Oakland person is here. I don't know who that is. Maybe it is Alma. Is that Alma?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. All right. So I'm going to open up your Meridian Valley Lab report. And this was 316. And you said you'd had one of these done before?
Oh, no, this was the first time.
This is your very first one. Okay. Now, Meridian Valley tests are complicated. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share it. So anybody that's not on our, you know what, I'm going to put you on mute until I get this all opened, because there's a lot of background noise. Okay, I'll just put you on mute. And then I'm going to share her lab report, and we'll do a quick run through on this. These are lab reports that could take, you know, a whole hour to just go through this one. But let me just share the window. All right. You should see a Meridian Valley. Now, if you're not on Join Me, just go to join.me and you'll be able to see my screen. I'm also going to see if I can, let me see if it'll let me start a recording. Okay, good. I did. I started a recording with it. And that way we hopefully will be able to see this. So this is the hormone panel. The first thing I do on page one is I want to look at their estrogen quotient, which is down here. That gives me an idea of the ratio between the estrogens and whether it's in a healthy, safe zone or not. We want this to be at least one. This is basically calculated by estrone plus estradiol, or estriol divided by estrone plus estradiol. So E3 divided by E1 plus E2. Yours is less than one, oftentimes indicates, most of the time indicates, and can be corrected by iodine. So you most likely have an iodine deficiency here. So you want to look at that, because that can affect your thyroid and a whole bunch of other stuff, breast tissue and all that. Okay. So that's that first thing I look at. Numbers don't look bad. And how old are you? You are, what was your birthday?
35.
So this is probably low-ish for somebody of your age, these numbers. You know, but your total estrogens are 40, which if you look at the ranges, and what day of your cycle was this done?
19.
So day 19. So you're in which phase? Let's test you out on this. What phase are you in then? Are you in the luteal?
Yes.
Okay, good. So you're in the luteal phase, and you would expect it to be between 10.8 and 89.2, and that's a very, very wide range, right, because of different ages and whatnot. 40 is, it's okay, but at 35, I would expect you to be a little higher than that. And the way that you'd want to raise that would be with estriol, not by doing any kind of bioidentical supplementation, but by increasing, you could do an estriol. Do you have any symptoms like vaginal dryness or anything like that?
No.
Okay, good. So no perimenopausal symptoms?
Some, yes, like night sweats.
Okay, you do. Okay, so.
A lot of night sweats and heavy PMS.
Okay, so you might consider definitely looking at what you can do to push it towards the estriol, which would be iodine. But you can also consider, if you wanted to, look at Bezuecan. I think they have estriol suppositories, which is a safe way to take it. The other piece we're looking at is down here, further down. Let's see, estrone. So we want to look at the 2:16 ratio, and yours is 4.8. We look at your in luteal phase, again, you're on the higher end of that, which is good because the 2 is the protective. But we also don't want 16 to be too low. Yours is not because 16 protects the bone. This looks perfectly fine. We look at our 4-hydroxy, which is the most dangerous one, the carcinogenic one. You know, you're going up towards the high end of it, right? And given that your total estrogen is towards the middle to the lower half of the range, and your 4-hydroxy is towards the higher end of the range, that concerns me that you're producing too much 4-hydroxy. There is a chart in the module 1 of NEPT that shows the estrogen metabolites, and you can see the things that increase and decrease the 4-hydroxy. The things I like to look at are things like brassicas or a supplement called DIM or I3C. But I'd want to see you lower that 4-hydroxy. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Methoxies, 13.6. So that's good because the methylated ones are high. They're at the high end of the range. So that's excellent. So your methylation status looks like it's pretty good.
Okay.
Okay, so page 2, we look at pregnenidiol is related to progesterone. It's a progesterone metabolite. Yours is, in the luteal phase, yours is quite low. So when you say you have PMS, you definitely are in a place where you don't have enough progesterone. And so even though your estrogen isn't at the top of the range, you're more estrogen dominant than progesterone dominant. So you could benefit from some herbs or things that would increase your body's production. Chaste tree, which is also known as Vitex agnus castus.
And, I already take that.
Well, maybe you're not taking enough.
Okay.
Yeah. And maybe you're
taking it was as recommended by a naturopath that I used to see a while back. She said to only take it in the luteal phase and to take 2 every day. So now I'm rethinking this and just thinking of taking it every day continuously.
No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. You do want to take it in. I would say starting at day 10, though. Is where
day
I would start.
10.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been taking it for years.
Well, then it's not working. It's either that the capsule isn't, it's not as potent as they say. You need a higher dose. Maybe a tincture would work better. You might switch to a tincture.
Okay.
And see if that works better.
Okay.
And you may need temporarily to do some progesterone cream. And I would definitely do that day 10 through 26, assuming you have a normal 28-day cycle.
And progesterone cream, can I just use one over the counter?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get one that's pure. Some of them have all kinds of excipients and, parabens and things like that. So, Premier Research has one, and there's a number of companies. Just read the labels.
And do you use it every day or just also luteal phase?
Nope. 10 to 26. Days 10 to 26.
26. Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
DHA is a little on the low side. I wouldn't address it at this point, except that your testosterone is low. And it, testosterone, you can only get prescription, and I don't like to jump in and throw testosterone at women. I'd rather see if you can get your DHEA up to move towards that, and if it doesn't, then you can look at that. But DHEA is easy to supplement in either a cream. There's a lot of creams that are over-the-counter, and there's also the little drops, the sublingual drops that Biomatrix makes. So that could be something to consider. Yeah, so you're definitely estrogen dominant over over progesterone and estrogen dominant over testosterone. Okay. You're looking down at the next section, and we don't have time to go into every detail about what everything here means.
Yeah.
We're going to go through these over and over again in our reproductive module, but the cortisone is high and the cortisol is, it's, you know, normal. Cortisol is the active metabolite. Cortisone is the storage. So I'm not really that concerned about that, except, let's see, the total of these metabolites is supposed to be 5,000. So we have 18 and 29, which yours are. Yours are. But the allotetrahydrocortisol is low. So you've got low metabolite. And off the top of my head, without my sheet in front of me to interpret what that exactly means, there's a really cool sheet that they usually send you when you get this. If you don't have it, ask them for it. But it's a really good learning sheet. We had a bunch of them at Shine a year before last and also gave them away at NEPT last year. But it's a really beautiful, beautiful flowchart.
They didn't send that. And that was about the allotetrahydrocortisol.
Yeah, here it is. I have it here, and let me see what it. It's called the Urine Hormone Interpretation Guide, and it's a great learning tool. So you want to make sure you have one of these so that you can use it when you're doing it. Mine seems like it got wet, and now it's all stuck together. But if you can get them, it's a fold out. It opens up into the width of 3 8.5 by 11 pages thick, with all kinds of flowcharts and descriptions. Mine fell apart. It describes every single test on here and what it means.
Oh, okay.
So it's a really beautiful thing. So you might just call them and say, hey, can you send me one of those?
Sure.
So the allotetrahydrocortisol, that's cortisone. Here we go. These three reflect 50% of the sum of the three, therefore. Okay, so it's the tetrahydrocortisone, allotetrahydrocortisol, and tetrahydrocortisol. So yours is, it comes up to, I think it's 7,000. Let me see. Yeah, it should be 5,000 to 7,000 for women. Yours is about 3,500. Yours is barely 5. It's just a little under 5. So it's because that allotetrahydrocortisol is low. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a subtle indication of your adrenals being low. And that combined with the DHEA being low, I would be looking at some adrenal support for sure. And you can go with a formula. You can go with, you know, obviously doing the stuff that's going to reduce the stress, but looking at some of our elixirs. Things like ashwagandha.
I do take ashwagandha. Would you recommend licorice root?
How's your blood pressure?
I have low blood pressure.
You do? Yeah, you can try licorice. You can definitely try licorice then. Let me look at the next page before I make that recommendation for sure. You're low in your mineral cortisol. Yeah, you definitely have low adrenals. This definitely needs to be addressed because these mineral corticoids are reflection of that. Lynn said something about your growth hormone, but I don't even see it listed here.
Oh, that's on the last page because that result came back yesterday.
Okay. So your melatonin looks okay. Your free T3 looks low. Okay. Free T4 is right in the middle of the range. Well, they're both right in the middle of the range, but it's on the lowish side, but I don't really put a lot of stock into it here. I want to follow it up with blood.
Follow it up with blood work. Where
I would do a thyroid and take a look at the free T3 and free T4. Now, this is good because you don't, you know, the elevated alpha of that 5-alpha reductase is a problem. Yours is fine. Your cortisol-cortisone ratio, I usually only am concerned when it's on the high side, but given that it's on the low side, I think you would do fine with licorice, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you do fine with licorice. Your oxytocin looks fine, actually very good, hefty. And then
yeah, she told me that was the best she's seen.
Oh, really?
Oh, good.
Yeah. Did you have a conversation with her at the lab?
I did, yeah.
So I've seen this before. What did she mm-hmm. say about the high growth hormone? The first thing you want to look at when you have high growth hormone is what about other pituitary hormones? And is there a problem with a pituitary or a pituitary adenoma? I have an 86-year-old who came back with like 10,000 on her growth hormone. And I was back and forth with many people over there. And they're like, well, you don't know, you know, check out the pituitary. We checked out everything and everything checked out okay. We did put her on, this is what helped her bring it down. They said sometimes it's kidney clearance because her blood level of growth hormone was fine. But this is high. So we looked at clearance, kidney clearance. Maybe it was over-clearing. Mm-hmm. Maybe we put her on a Romania tincture, and it's coming down. So we haven't gotten it done again in about 6 months. I don't know where it's at now. But could it be related to headaches? Sure, if it's related to something going on in your pituitary, it absolutely could be related to headaches. So you would want to talk to your doctor about, you know, do they want to analyze it or at least do a blood level to follow up with it.
Blood level of the HGH?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Blood level of HGH.
Yeah, because that's why I was asking you, because she didn't know much about it. She kind of dismissed it. She's like, well, if it's over 10,000, I would worry about it. But just based on what I looked up about it, you know, when I saw some things like associated with headaches, I was like, oh, because I've been struggling with headaches and I tried all the routes. And it doesn't always seem to be hormonal or the neck issue.
Yeah, get it tested in the blood. Yeah,
and it's just
in the body. Get others.
Right.
Yeah, they should be able to order it. It might be more expensive than the normal TSH kind of thing, but also I would get the TSH done too.
GSH?
TSH, your thyroid.
TSH. Oh, yeah, I'm getting that already.
Yeah,
so I'll ask
because if it looks skewed,
HGH.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I talked a lot about this in the Shine that was not last year, the year before, where we did the HPAT axis.
Mm-hmm.
There was on the first day in the presentation, on the first day, I went through a lot of detail on the pituitary hormones.
Okay. And, you know, interestingly, I mean, there's a lot there research. When I was just researching, and I don't know what my growth hormone was before in the past, like 10, 20 years ago, but there is a correlation in a few different articles that I read between high growth hormone and colon cancer. And as you know, I had colon cancer. So this was interesting to me. I don't know.
That I wasn't aware of. That's interesting. Yeah, get it tested in your blood to see if it's just the urine or just the blood. That'll give us another bit of information.
And given this, should I avoid things that raise the growth hormone that we always try to do in NEPT, like, you know, eating
only if
around
the blood
meals?
Is high. Only if the blood is high. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if it's high, then we'll move on to the next step and see.
Exactly.
Maybe test something else. Okay.
Exactly. If it's high, then I would be looking at doing an ultrasound or some kind of imaging of your pituitary. Because sometimes people have benign adenomas, but they start to cause pressure, right? And the pituitary is so little. If it's got a little growth on it and it's stuck in that little bone, I forget what it's called, but this little spot where it's in the bone. And if it's got some kind of adenoma growth on it, it's going to put pressure because it's got just a little spot to sit there.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'll follow it up with blood work and see what happens. Thank you for your insight. I had no idea. Didn't know what to make of this.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Absolutely. Okay, bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Oh, wait. I'm going to close that one and go there. And then I'm going to pull up Allison's. I guess it was I have to go to the BloodChem software. BloodChem software. Why is it BloodShed software? Okay. BloodChem. software. Actually, this is it's remembered for me. Here we go. And I'll get in with, what is this? I'm going to get out of that. I'm going to go to my, okay, I'll open a different window here, and then I'll show it to you. Okay, I'm in Bloodchem software here, right? Yeah. Okay, I'll have to log in again, and endocrinology, there we go. Okay, so let me open up. All right, I'm going to open up Allison's line, and we will, let me pull this out. Okay, good. I'm going to switch windows. Okay. Yeah, you should see the Bloodchem software. And I'm going to go back here and open up Allison's line. Where'd she go? Here she is. Okay. So, Allison, remind me the name of the person that...
Okay. I've put AG as a surname for all of my patients, so that it's easy to
find them. Okay, so I'm going to look for view patients, and then we're going to go to AG, and then what's her last name?
And it's I. Brunson. So you can see that I. Brunson.
I
That's
see
the one.
Yeah. And tell everybody, because I read the thing, but tell everybody the background with this person. And the question.
Okay, so when a partner left in November, this patient was allocated to me. So this is an NHS GP 10-minute appointment patient. And I did a full blood count, and it came back with a microcytic anemia, which means small red cells and anemic. I repeated it, and then I saw in the notes that since 1960, well, since birth, she's had beta thalassemia trait, which is a bit like sickle cell anemia. So there's thalassemia and sickle cell anemia. They both are genetic modifications of the red cells. And she's got trait, which means it's less severe than beta thalassemia. It's full, so it's a heterozygous genetic situation. Mm-hmm. And so I had an appointment with her to discuss her results in NHS terms. So this is where you've got much wider normal ranges, you know, mm-hmm. standard normal ranges to discuss it. And her comments were, her symptoms are no worse than usual at present. She's aware that her anemia is better than is usual for her. She keeps fit. She walks every day. She swims. She is aware of early muscle fatigue. And she takes green-lipped mussel, which helped her a neck problem she'd had. We talked about supplements, but she's seen the hematologist. They've not been helpful, and her son is also affected. So in the NHS, we probably just wouldn't do much with this, but it would be very good if we could have some way of supporting her. So I've had fun finally having time to put some patients, as you see, into the Bloodchem software.
Yeah.
And the report's very interesting because not only is it showing the microcytic anemia, and there's nowhere to sort of point out to the system that we already know the reason for that, but it also mentions a lot of other things related to it. So her lipid panel index, her allergy index, and her blood sugar index were all considered high. And she also had a high index, I think, for parasites, which I thought was interesting. So it's an interesting to look at, and her zinc need was listed as high. So it's interesting to me just beginning to get using the Bloodchem software.
Yeah, and it points out things that you may not see, right? And you look through it, and so this basically B12 and folate because of, well, yeah, but this is not taking into account that her MCV is very low, and you normally wouldn't think B12 and folate, but they can certainly help with the oxygenation and with red blood cell synthesis. So I would, if she's open to doing some supplementation, I would certainly be considering B12 and folate. You know, with thalassemia, iron doesn't usually help. Yeah. That's my experience. Vitamin E tends to be something that's had some research with thalassemia. We have it in my family. I fortunately don't have it, but many of my sisters do. I have a brother who has both hemochromatosis and thalassemia, which is quite an interesting blood picture. So the reason they picked it up with eosinophils are high, right? And also basophils are fine, but eosinophils are high. That's probably why they picked up parasites, but that could be allergy as well. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, whenever I'm looking at a complex. Sorry, go ahead.
There's no real proof of it being intestinal parasites.
No.
I'm just wondering if I give her a copy of the patient report, I'll have to spend half an hour explaining to her that she doesn't need to worry about this, that, and the other. But it's all interesting.
It is. It is. So, you know, I would, like anything else, whenever we're talking with people, I would be going back to foundations because this is a genetic issue. She, no matter what she does, she's not going to really get those counts up into the normal range just because she can't. But certain things do help. So there are like vitamin E, the B vitamins, but her basics, right? Is she on a good anti-inflammatory type diet? That's going to help. Anything that can increase the oxygen containing stuff. So anything that supports mitochondrial function, which again would be the B complex vitamins and good amino acids, good stomach acids. So something like this, I think, always goes back to supporting them on all the diet and lifestyle changes that they can make that will help them to function optimally within their genetic limitations. Like here it's saying red blood cell index. Obviously, that's where she has the problem. I mean, this says she has a bunch of stuff with heavy metals. Let's see what they say about heavy metals. Allergy is in eosinophils. So they're looking at B12 iron. I wouldn't supplement iron. How old is she?
53,
yeah, I wouldn't supplement iron. B6. B6 is important. Where's the long list? Here it is. I'm just going to look at her ALT and AST. Do you guys do that? Her Alk-Phos is low, which definitely relates to zinc. Her ALT is actually a little high. So those are not real clear indications, but B6, but certainly a B complex, you know, especially since she's in NHS and it's going to be harder to get, you know, more of a buy-in because they're not used to that kind of stuff. Now, is exactly. She somebody who wants, ask for this kind of help, or is she more just, you know, just give me my pills and send me on my way?
I'm not sure. I've seen her twice. The last was the 15th of March. I can give her a ring and have a chat to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and say there are some nutritional things. There, you know, this is a condition that within medicine, there's really nothing we do about it. But some of the nutritional things, and if you're interested, we can, next time you come in, we can have a conversation about what some of those are. You know, and I would support her B vitamins. I would look at vitamin E because I don't remember where those studies are, but I remember researching it for my family members and finding that vitamin E was really critical. And anything, you know, inflammatory markers are going to help as well. She's got problems with her lipids. She's got high triglycerides. What was her glucose? Yeah. Her glucose looks pretty normal, right? But her triglycerides are high. Her HDLs are, where's her HDLs? HDLs are low. So metabolic syndrome, right? High lipids.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you do hemoglobin A1C, but if her hemoglobin A1C is not, I don't see it.
I didn't do one. There hasn't been one done so far, but I will following this.
You might want to do that and just say, you know, you're suspicious of some blood sugar stuff, even though your fasting blood sugar looks good. That's usually the last to go. And we don't want you to suddenly have a wake-up call when you have diabetes. We'd like to see if there's something we can do to prevent you from going down that path if you're open to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for submitting it. All right. Looks like we're out of time pretty much. We have 4 more minutes before my next group comes on. I'm looking to see if Lynn has any other questions here in the chat that we need to be looking at. And let's see. either from the previous call. Oh, your talk's tomorrow and online. I've signed up for it, but I haven't had a chance to listen to any of them. I may have to buy the, I'll probably buy the things. I'll use your link to buy the things. I think I signed up under your link anyway. Jamie, this is something for Alma to look at. This Meridian Valley, the interpretation guide, the PDF. I'd still have them send you one because it's beautiful and it really is helpful to be able to open it, but that's great. Oh, wow. I don't know that, Jamie. We should check into that. Lynn's going to check into it. I didn't know they were going to change the licensing for UK residents. Yeah, I know that the understanding for using it within NEPT, the blood chem software, was that you could use it as long as until you were graduated, and then you would have to create your own license. You couldn't continue to use it under mine. Jamie says, do I ever supplement with iron? Yes, indeed I do, but not with postmenopausal women. I'm very careful about it. I would prefer to do indirect iron supplementation, especially because we don't want to build up. It's very oxidative, so I let the body do it itself. So I use a lot of yellow dock with folks, and that really helps to support stomach acid. Some of the other minerals has iron in it. And, of course, eating more iron-rich foods, lots of greens and smoothies and things like that. I would increase it with the greens and vitamin C with it. And yellow dock's amazing. Yellow dock's amazing. And if they do meat, then they would do, you know, grass-fed beef or something like that. I don't know what this, they have moved to functional DX, but apparently they are a disaster. I'm not sure what that means. Okay, great. Oh, BlendChem software moved to functional DX. I guess I haven't been paying attention. Oh, licensing. Okay. Yeah, we'll find out for you because we want you to be able to have access to it. It's a great piece of software. All right, guys. Well, thank you guys so much for being here. I'll open your lines so we can all say goodbye to each other. And we'll talk to you soon. And bye now.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Be well.
All right. I'm going to switch over to the other line. I'm going to stop this and end the event. Yes.